dedicated to all the hackers and the crackers.
To the hackers and the crackers.
I see in binary, I speak source code. Step on my toes, I'll post a million JPEGs of you in a fag pose. In your digital stance, getting firewalled ho. Cause I'm riding the net in my 6-4. I was a dick with my 56. Now with my cable, I'm able to get that stable. On the out, my name is Ace and I'm a Leo. On the digital highway, my name is Neo and I'm a hero. In a flash, I'll sue you on burning dream packs. You need some ISOs? Let me through my hard drive rifle. Our exchange you could never stifle. In a digital hug, you just caught the love bug. I bootlegged your CD. I caused the fight between Un and Jay-Z. To CG, it's all gonna be free. Whether we take it by force or we take it nicely. You feel that rattle in your bones? When I tell you we just hacked Dow Jones. And NASDAQ leaves your pride on your back. Cause I am he who loves to hack and crack. Cause I am he who loves to hack and crack.
This is dedicated to the hackers and the crackers. Serial codes, source codes, ISOs, RANs, SIPs, SIPs.
Hello and welcome to Binary Revolution Radio, episode 117 for October 11th, 2005. I'm Strom Carlson.
I'm Black Ratchet. We have two guests this week, both from Boston 2600. We have Koresh and Stalin. Say hi, guys.
Hi.
Koresh has been on the show before, talking about the meetings and everything. We had Stalin's a bin rev version.
Woo!
Yes, we're going to have the towel party after the show.
Yeah, we're deflowering Stalin. I've always wanted to deflower a Soviet leader, but
goddammit. That sounds unfun.
You know, we need to find out like a term for that fetish. Obsessed about, you know,
Soviet-philia?
Soviet leaders.
The Cold War era was so fun, you know, kind of just waiting for our impending doom to fall upon us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just thinking whether Brezhnev is going to have a decent day or not. You know, it keeps me going.
Well, don't worry, because if there is a nuclear attack, you can always hide under the desk.
No, there's too many computers under it right now at this point. I can't really fit under it at this point.
Yeah, but they'll absorb all the EMP stuff. Talking about nuclear attack, this actually happened about a month or so ago. Cypher X, who was he's a jarhead, he's from the Marine Corps and recently exited. He sent me a scan of one of his field manuals, and it says, in the event of a nuclear attack and you are exposed and have no shelter, you are supposed to lie on the ground and put your feet toward the blast and just sit there until the shockwave passes.
It sounds effective.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Are you also supposed to put a paper bag over your head or something?
No, see, if you dig a hole and put your head in it, you know, if you don't see it, it never really happened. Well, that's my theory to life anyway. I tell Crush this all the time. It's like, you know, don't look at the package, you know, of item X you're buying, you know, or else, you know, you probably won't be able to eat it. And, you know, man doesn't listen, but I think it's a pretty decent ideology, a decent way to look at life. Don't read the package labels.
Yeah, it's always a good thing. Just it's ostrich syndrome. If you don't see it, it's not there.
Exactly.
All right, let's get into housekeeping.
Yay! Let's see. Our one housekeeping announcement is I was cruising in the car today, and I heard on WBZ 10:30 a.m. that Yahoo was getting into the podcasting. I forgot the term they used. I think it was like, I don't know what they were calling it. They were using some type of snazzy term, like, you know, trend, or they were making it sound like this really cool thing that was happening on the internet, and all of you should be envious of that's happening, and you're not there. So I checked it out, and technically, I guess we're already listed. Or if you do a search for BinRev Radio, we have all kinds of hits for the podcasts. But none of the podcasts actually work because the two that they always reference seem to be 404 errors. So I submitted us. Hopefully in the next couple of days they'll be adding us. And you can go search this out at http://audio.search.yahoo.com.
Hopefully you can spell that.
Yeah. Audio. AUDIO. If you don't know what the yahoo.com is...
What, the .mx doesn't work, or, you know, .co.jp doesn't work? You know, what about all the people that don't live in the States? You know, What about
that's a good question. I don't know if we're working for all the other, because I know it's like yahoo.co.jp and
screw them.
Screw all the foreigners.
I got this
web hosting for you later in the show.
Okay.
So yeah, let's get
into
the email.
That's about it for things. Let's go into the email.
Hey Black Ratchets, Rom Carlson and insert guest here. First of all, love the show. I was listening to episode 116 and you were having a discussion on the performance rating that AMD gives their chips. First of all, let me just say up front, I am an AMD fan, so take this as coming from one. But they are very correct in saying their clock speed does not indicate performance. The AMD 3000 Plus is a higher clock speed than the 3200 Plus, but the 3200 Plus performs better in nearly every test I have seen. Also, Intel is doing this with their new processors as well. A quote from Wikipedia. Because of the philosophy change, a Pentium 4 clocked at 3.0 GHz with a 1 MB L2 cache could now outperform a 3.4 GHz Pentium 4 with 512 KB L2 cache. Clock speeds could no longer solely differentiate the performance of different Pentium 4s. As a result, Intel has adopted a PR rating of its own using three-digit numbers. Intel now faces the challenge of making consumers compare its processors based on PR ratings rather than raw clock speed. Ironically, a problem which Intel created for itself. Check it out here at tinyurl.com/bravo38sierra. No, the 38 just messed me up for some reason. Yes.
That once again, that's tinyurl.com/bravo38sierra.
Yes. Anyways, keep up the good work. Love the show. Love more of the phone content. Also, if you wouldn't mind, I'm interested in organizing a BinRev meeting in Southern California in the Victorville, Hesperia, Apple Valley area. Could you please announce this on the show and ask anyone interested to email klistplusmeeting@gmail.com? I would appreciate it a lot. Oh, and if you do read this on the air, shouts to Cisco Lochalesco. What is it? Psychosol Lochoas Loco and Danathor. I'm not even going to attempt to pronounce those again. Lord Kalis. Smiley face.
Yes, I'm standing corrected. I usually stand by my whole measuring, you know, CPU support. I stand by my statement of CPU performance measuring is completely subjective. I took two courses on this in school on why this is so hard, and there are dozens upon dozens of standards out there since like 1970. Even before that, people measuring performance. You know, special things that are counted in one aren't counted in others. There's all kinds of special terms. There's MIPS, there's flops, whetstones, drystones, clock speed, cache. There's 15 ways till Sunday that you can measure CPU performance, and just measuring them on one test will say that it's better than another chip, but if you run another test on them, it will say it's worse than other chips. So I'm leaving you with kind of my own take on an old saying. There are lies, damn lies, and CPU performance specs. I think everyone agrees with that, I hope.
Yep.
And also, this just occurred to me. This also kind of proves that overclockers are really silly. Just, you know, increasing your clock speed is not going to basically increase your CPU performance. Thank you very much.
Yay! Yeah.
But, man, you can get, like, an extra 2 to 3 frames per second on Quake, man. You know, like, that, you know, 2 to 3 frames per second, you know, will totally make you a better gamer.
But hasn't
exactly.
That kind of always been the, you know, the philosophy of anyone who tweaks every last possible ounce of performance out of their, you know, computer or car or whatever, you know?
Their Gen 2 box?
Yeah, exactly, right? You make your initial upgrade, which gives you this enormous leap in speed, and then you start tweaking it and spend inordinate amounts of time and money going for that extra one cycle a second or 1 mile an hour, you know, or 1 pound-foot of torque or whatever.
You know, this does occur to me. I don't think we've had an episode yet where people haven't mentioned Gen 2.
We'll have to try that next time to see if we
mentioned
Gen 2.
We've lost already.
Yeah.
See, I didn't...
Go ahead, Scott.
You mentioned frame rates before.
You note that down. Edit that out.
Yeah, I know.
I already did. Frame rates. Stalin did.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just want to thank whoever out there ported Duke Nukem 3D to Mac OS X. You kind of made my shitty week a little bit better.
Really? You can run Duke Nukem 3D on Mac OS?
It is a special port of it for OS X.
Wow. Seriously, find the URL and put that in your personal hacking stories, because I really would like to try that. Cool.
Oh, yeah, I can send it over to you. It's pretty damn small, I mean, comparatively. So it's great.
How do you switch weapons? There's no right mouse.
Everything's on the keyboard. I'm still in the process of mapping everything out the best way, especially on a compact keyboard like that. It's a real pain in the ass.
I can imagine.
No, but you can control click.
Yeah, I know. Tell me about it. Seriously, haven't we already mentioned this? The whole having one mouse key is like being born with one nipple.
I don't know if you've said that personally, but that's pretty amusing. So yeah, that sounds cool. Also, as far as starting a BinRev meeting in the high desert of Southern California, that would be pretty cool. I know there are a couple people who come all the way to the LA 2600 meetings and EC213 meetings from like the El Cajon Pass area. So I'm pretty sure they would appreciate having something closer to home. However, I'm not sure how terribly successful you're going to be, simply because I know that there have been maybe at least one attempt at doing a DC 909 group, and that has consistently just fallen apart. So best of luck, and email me if you want any help, because I run the DC 213 meeting, and I'd be more than happy to help you organize that.
Also, perhaps the entire thing could be that, you know, they just don't have a good organizer. Kaleth could be the driving force between BinRev 909 or whatever you want to call it.
It would be BinRev 760, in fact.
BinRev 760.
909.
But Kaleth, we'll put you in the announcements for the next couple of shows.
Isn't there like five or six different like 2600 meetings in California or some? Pretty ridiculous number of 2,600 meetings in California. So,
well, I know there's one in. Let's see, there's one in San Diego. There's one in San Francisco. There's one in Los Angeles.
Yeah, I think there's one like in Orange County somewhere.
I hear California is pretty big.
Yeah. Don't forget the Los Angeles metropolitan area. You know, just Los Angeles County and Orange County combined are like what 25, 30 million people. So.
Yeah, not bad.
It's crazy. So, yeah, I can understand there being tons of meetings.
Yeah,
I think Stalin should move back out there. Maybe he can get, ESL version of the meetings going on. What do you think? Might be mildly successful in the Southern California area.
For those of you who don't know Stalin is Mexican. He's very proud of that fact. How often do you go back to Mexico?
About once every year.
Once every year? I thought it was more often than that.
Oh, no, no. I tend to stay away.
We could have, like, an ESL. Here's what we could do. At the Boston 2600, we can have an ESL version of Stalin doing the translating. I'm not making fun of ESL, nor non-English, non-native English speakers.
I mean, like, it shouldn't be that bad in California, you know, since most, you know, prerequisite to live in California, you kind of have to know Spanish, so I think everybody can handle it down there. But, you know, Boston, on the other hand, you know, that shit isn't a requirement, so, you know, you have to pick up on the not saying R stuff, and, you know, but yeah, I think I could manage ESL talk.
Yeah, why don't we have more, real Boston people come into the meetings around here?
As opposed to those fake Boston people that we currently have, huh?
Yeah, like all of us.
I'm in Boston.
Really from Boston.
I'm born and raised in Boston.
Yeah, but you don't sound like it. I want to have some real Boston people. You know what I mean?
I'll go. We can get that announcer from that Discovery Fire Channel Discovery Channel Fire show that they're doing in Boston. And the announcer does a fake Boston accent during the entire show, and it just sits me and just grates on me. Oh, it's horrible.
I've heard amazing things.
Oh, man. We're really drifting here, so let's just go and move on to the next
email. Right. Before we move on to the next email, again, that email address is kalisplusmeeting, that's kahless+meeting@gmail.com.
Yeah, we'll put that announcement too. We'll toss you in the announcement for the next couple of weeks.
Yeah.
Because hey, you know, more BinRev meetings are equal to good. Our next email tonight is from Madar, M-A-D-A-R. So, I have a asterisk question, which would seem to be simple, but I'm having a dog of a time nailing it down in a solid answer online. My question is regarding SIP phones inside of a LAN. What exactly is the deal here? I understand that SIPs don't play well with NAT, and I pretty much understand why it's an issue. SIP can't be bound to a specific port, etc. However, I don't understand why you can't have, or can you, a SIP phone inside the network that talks to Asterisk while Asterisk translates into EEX and then connects outside my router to a service, i.e. EFWD. I'm assuming they can speak IAX. Could you please break this down for me a bit? I'm living in Taiwan, and I have seen a SIP phone in shops, an ArtDO IPF 2000, I believe. I'm tempted to pick one up, however, it's not terribly cheap. If I'm not going to be able to get out of my LAN to reach my family and friends in other parts of the world, it's going to be pretty useless to me. I'm pretty sure that this can be worked around, but I hate to drop cash only to find out that I'm wrong. Thanks in advance, Madar. P.S. Stop talking about freaking phones already.
Stop talking about phones and a phone question. Oh, my gosh, what do they ever do? I think I'm
going
to explode.
My head's going to explode.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, thank you for the mail. I'm pretty sure this is – if you're not the first Taiwanese listener we've heard of, certainly the first one who's sent us email. So,
yay, we're international.
I can't believe all the way in Taiwan. That's amazing.
Yeah.
Anyway, what you're talking about is perfectly doable. In fact, Ratch and I do exactly that. We have SIP phones on our desks that – you know, talk to our Asterisk boxes, which then talk to each other via EEX. So it's very doable, and it's really ridiculously easy to do. It's seamless as well. I mean, pretty much you just set up in your configuration that the SIP phone acts as an extension off your Asterisk box, and then the Asterisk box switch you to the EEX trunk.
All it's very easy. All it's just done in your configs. You can specify it right out. Mm-hmm. To be honest, it doesn't even show... It doesn't even register to me that this is happening. It's completely seamless.
Well, I mean, like,
what's so surprising about Taiwan?
Pardon?
What's so surprising about him being from Taiwan? I mean, everything in my PC right now was made there in the first place.
Well, I mean, given that this is mainly an English language show and it's, you know, for the most part within the context of the North American continent. It's we try and have international perspective, but this is still kind of interesting to me, you know?
It's just pretty cool in general.
Mm-hmm. The next email is from Lumi. And it says, the really cool Mac supercomputer is at Virginia Tech. Originally, they used G5 dual processors and just bought a ton of them. When the Xserve came out, they bought a ton of those as well to replace the G5s. There's a movie on it available at the following site, and that's apple.com/hardware/video/Virginia Tech. A really quick note on RAID. RAID 0 is striped, RAID 1 is mirrored. Some controllers can do RAID 0 plus 1, which is a mirrored stripe. Finally, in regards to the Pixar air conditioners and having to manually shut down the computers, my friend just recently acquired a managed power bar that he can tell it into and shut down power cycle computers from remotely. Sure would have helped a lot with Pixar. Regards, Lumi.
Well, Lumi, thanks for clearing that up. I always get confused about, you know, striping, mirroring and striping. And when you get to RAID 5, I completely lose it. You know, it's like RAID 5 mirrored striping plus parity or some such nonsense. I know that I know how RAID 5 works. I know how RAID 4 works, 3, 2, and 1, and 0. They all work. I just don't know the damn terms. I gotta say, those power strips you're talking about are very badass. I've seen them in use, and they are just the coolest things ever for a hung machine that's physically dead. However, the problem with the manual shutdown is that in order to gracefully take a machine down, you can't just unplug it. That's essentially of like putting someone to sleep by snapping their neck. It's something you just don't do. However, like one of the things that I always want to do is I just want to have one of those manageable power outlet type things and plug my DSL modem into it, and if one of my servers detects that I don't have internet, it'll just automatically power cycle it for me, which is always really annoying when I'm at work and my DSL connection goes down and I can't access any of my machines on my LAN, and it makes me sad. But, you know, that's what I want. However, I don't think that's ever going to happen anytime soon because these things cost gobs and gobs and gobs of money.
well, you just need to win the lottery like the rest of us. And
ah, yes, yes, indeed. Do you want to read the next email, and I can do my well-rehearsed answer?
Sure, sure. Hey, Black Ratchet, Strom, and any other co-hosts. I found this story on the MyGot forums. I guess that's how you pronounce that.
I assume so.
Yeah. Some guy said that while taking apart his laptop to replace a broken PCMCIA riser, he found a hardware keylogger that was wired to his Ethernet card that would send keys to the Department of Homeland Security. Here's the link. tinyurl.com/7echogolf72. I'm learning. Crazy stuff. Do you think that the government is trying to spy on people? I wouldn't doubt it, but anywho, I have a good idea for an episode. Maybe a good, wholehearted episode all about freaking payphones, old school, and other freaks are fun. Love, Termite. Wow, that was a random ending.
I like the old school freaks are fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know what the hell that is, so we'll get back to you on that. If you're listening to the show, I'll give you a second to bring up this webpage. Bear in mind, I wouldn't visit it from work, and I will tell you the reason why. So I'll give you a second to bring it up. Okay, I hope you had fast fingers. Wow. Let me say, this is really, really, really fishy. So, well, first off, this whole website is based off of a guy's website who's an anti-government white power talk show host. Not that this discounts it outright. I'll just say that I took it with a very, 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 very large grain of salt. Well, okay, next. I have never seen a laptop ever with a shielded wire going between the keyboard and the system board like he's the one showing right there in the, I don't know what he says, the little pictures he has there. I've seen small wires going from the laptop to the mother system board around 1997 or so, but anything past like 2000 that I have seen has some type of ribbon cable or some type of kind of like flat data film. I'm not sure exactly what they call it. It's this really flat plasticky thing, and it looks like a sheet of paper, really. Third, if this gizmo is hooked into the Ethernet card, it can't magically talk into the Internet. Ethernet is designed for local LAN transmission. This isn't going to go and do the government well unless you're sitting right on your LAN. Fourth, this is correct, the keyboard, KeyGhost keyboard logger, that's what he calls it, right? Yes. Is hooked into the Ethernet board, and there is little to no way for this thing to talk to the network without killing your Ethernet connection. Well, technically not. You can't piggyback it onto your existing Ethernet. It will quite literally break your network. Fifth, I really loved this quote. I called the police, as having a keylogger unknown to me in my laptop is a serious offense. They told me to call the Department of Homeland Security. Now I can picture this conversation at the precinct. We got like some guy answering the phone and a sergeant sitting right behind him. And he just turns around and says, Sarge, I got this guy on line one. He's talking about like this keylogger in his laptop. What should I do? And the sergeant thinks there for a second. Oh, man, tell him to call the Department of Homeland Security. It's going to, really blow his mind. And I can just see this happening because, I always heard the story about this guy, constantly harassing the police department about how aliens were sending, evil signals controlling his brain. And one of the cops finally told him, here's what you do. You take your tinfoil, you cover yourself in it, and you make sure the shiny side's out and everything will stop going into your brain. And he called back a day later saying, thank you very much. I don't know if it's true. I really don't know. But it's a humor story nonetheless. So finally, getting Freedom of Information Act request approved, it's insanely hard to do in any type of form of law enforcement agency. It's the law of the land, and it's cool, and you always get some stuff out eventually. But the law says you can't get stuff, items relating to national security. As we all know, national security is lovely and an all-encompassing term that can include anything ranging from the color of the presidential underwear to the lunch menu at the Langley Falls High School.
Oh, come on. We all know Bush wears smiley face underwear.
We'll have a nice day. My opinion is, I'm not sure about anyone else, take it as you will. Something like this is sort of kind of possible, I guess, if you really wanted to try it, but not as complex as he's talking about it. and this exactly thing is just grade A, total 100% complete bullshit.
Well, I mean, like, all right, so, you know, you said the dude was a skinhead radio host,
mm-hmm.
or, yeah, so, you know, so let's say, you know, maybe the dude's under investigation. I could see a possible keylogger, but as a kind of a general kind of it's on everybody's machine kind of situation, I don't see that.
You know, that's very true. I didn't actually think of that. But he says he's repairing his own PC card riser, or PCMCIA riser. And if someone installed that, that means they'd have to basically take his laptop, crack it open, resolder this little thing in between there, and somehow figure out how to connect it to his Ethernet card.
I think the whole function of his existence is to increase the general level of paranoia and uncertainty in the public consciousness.
Oh, that's exactly what it is.
Yeah, so this just fits in with that so perfectly.
It would seem that he, like, you know, one of the case scenarios would just be, like, he's trying to credit himself a bit better, you know, like, you know, to be like, oh, you know, the government's kind of after me, so, you know, I do have some sort of credit because the government is looking into me, so.
Yeah, he wants his 15 minutes of fame.
Yeah. And, you know. Shit like that seems silly to me, but, you know,
it's silly.
Yeah, I don't buy it.
I don't buy it either. I heard this story, and actually it was from a Tom Clancy novel, but he said that it was actually happened in real life, that the Israeli secret intelligence, in order to assassinate a terrorist once, he bought his cell phone in to be serviced, and they replaced it with an identical cell phone that worked completely, but it had a bomb attached, and it would only, like, explode if you basically called it and ported a certain DTMF sequence. And I just find that interesting, but I guess theoretically it could happen.
Yeah, I mean, theoretically, sure, probably.
Mm. Come on, who takes your cell phone to get serviced these days?
Well, this was back in the early 90s when you had
okay.
these. It was a StarTAC flip phone, allegedly.
And it cost like $4,000.
Yeah. So actually when you got it serviced. So, yeah, take this as it is. Look at the pictures. Form your own opinions. I'm not saying I'm preaching everything. You never know. The Department of Homeland Security could have everything evil and stuff. But I really don't think so.
Stuff. I love that.
Yeah. But just the wiring job itself, personally, I think it's stupid. Either way.
You know, like, also, like, you know, there's a much, like, so they have the little module in there, and, you know, it could work as a keylogger, but, like, you know, it's still an actual physical piece of hardware when, you know, you could be much more sneaky. Like, I've read papers on how people have written, like, basically BIOS patches. They, you know, you can infer, you know, infect the BIOS, and you could have, you know, code in there that, you know, once your machine gets turned on, you know, you can basically execute this little piece of code on there. You know, that to me would be a much cooler way to handle a keylogger of sorts, you know, to really be sneaky. Be a much cooler, you know.
You just cost me $6,000.
$6,000.
Yeah, well, also, I now that you mentioned that, with the whole BIOS patches and everything, it's a whole lot easier because there's apparently a piece of government spyware called, I believe it's called Magic Lantern. And allegedly all the antivirus companies, well, maybe not all of them, but definitely Symantec, McAfee, and there was some other major one out there that I – can't remember right now. They all agreed basically that you put a backdoor in their code that says, if you see this, it's not a virus, ignore it. It's officially like an electronic sensitive gathering thingy.
Huh.
So you never know. It could be backdoored right now. I think it'd be a whole lot easier to do that rather than take out this evil keylog slogger thingy.
Yep.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Time for hacking stories?
Yeah, I think so. We're kind of just sort of ranting and raving on this.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'll stir it off as always. This Sunday, I went to the grand opening of the New Hampshire Telephone Museum. with Red Nerd. And I have pictures up on my website if you want to check it out. I took gratuitous photos of the various phones that they have there and their antique stepper switch. It was a lot of fun, and I went up with my friend Red Nerd and I. We basically played along there and spent about 2 or 3 hours just sitting in this room with them and just talking to the guys and playing on their Switch and locking up the step twice, and they had to clear it for us. Generally just had a good time. I have also been playing with a lot of ham radio stuff lately. Way up.
Nerd alert.
Hello, we're all nerds here. Look, you're talking about on a hacking radio show and you're calling me the nerd. What the hell, man?
Some people. The nerd. At some point, I will actually go ahead and narrate the high-quality digital recording I made at the Seattle Telephone Museum a year and a half ago of the step and the number 5 and the number 1 crossbar in the panel.
We're all waiting.
Yes.
I was actually just happy because Strom very nicely sent me his raw copy, so I'll be listening to that while at work on Tuesday.
Yeah, I've
got to
work on it.
Probably editing the show.
Yeah, it's kind of unlistenable. Anyway, my personal hacking story is I broke down and I bought one of those iPod battery replacement kits. My cousin came to me and he said, my iPod only lasts an hour these days. I said, well, let me try one of the battery replacement kits. So I bought from, iPodJuice.com. And it was a snap.
iPod Juice with a J?
Yeah, J-U-I-C-E.
Okay.
As in apple juice or orange juice or whatever. And it was amazingly easy to open up the iPod, remove the old battery, stick in the new one, snap it back together, and charge it up.
You don't have to solder or anything?
No soldering. Just pretty much they give you a little blue plastic wedge doohickey thing that you squeeze in to the seam between the silvery part and the polycarbonate front, and you just kind of gently wrench the silvery bit away from the front, and there are little tabs on the front part that snap into the metal bit in the back. So you just snap those off, and pretty much the whole back comes off.
Interesting.
Yeah, you remove the hard drive, which just, you know, a connector that snaps on. Then you unplug the old battery and replace it with a new one.
Hmm.
So assuming you don't have the shakes, it's a blast. It's a breeze.
No, probably I do, but I'm never going to be a neurosurgeon. Look at that way. Probably why I can't solder either. So, Stalin, have you done any computer hacksory stuff this week?
Not really, just a lot of chilling, but the hacksory stuff, no, I don't have any interesting stories this month or this week, to really tell.
Well, you're just boring.
Yeah, I am. Yeah, you gotta get over it, at some point.
Yeah. What about you, Koresh?
I've been working on a lot of things in the last week, trying to bring myself back up from some personal dark spots. I've been fixing one of other people's computers, which is, one of those things I just love to do. Not really.
Pays the bills, man.
Yeah. If anyone out there wants me to fix their computer, I don't recommend bringing it to me in the next couple of weeks because I'm going to tell you to screw. I've been working on a website for a friend involving some do-it-yourself projects in the Boston area, which is pretty cool, encompassing music and the arts and whatnot. And it's actually really cool. I'll let you guys know when it's all done. Today I actually re-listened to Robert Steele's talk from The Last Hope because I missed half of it and never went back and listened to it, and I'm kind of pissed off that I had to leave during it. But if you haven't heard it and you're actually, interested in intelligence and whatnot, I definitely recommend checking it out.
What's the talk?
Talk?
Yeah.
I'll give you the title of it. They got a long title. Hang on.
Well, first off, what's it about? I mean, because Robert Steele means nothing to me.
Oh, really? I'm sorry. He's the guy who does all the, well, I don't really want to call it social engineering, but he was the former, a former government official and, worked as, I don't want to say as a spy, but like a covert agent, whatever, was over in Asia for a while, and he just talks about just global intelligence and how the U.S. just falls short in, every category as far as what we could be doing compared to what we are. The name of the talk was Everything You Wanted to Know About Spying, 9/11, and Why We Continue to Screw Up.
I'll have to
and
check that
really,
out.
It's really, really long. It's over 4 hours, but it's definitely worth checking out because it's in five.
Holy cow.
Yeah, that's why I was only able to stay for a couple of hours because I had other stuff to do that day.
I can imagine. Well, that's cool.
Yes, definitely worth listening to.
I'll be sure to listen to that. I'll put it right after Strom's Seattle Computer Museum tape. So,
telephone museum, not a computer museum.
Yeah, computer. It's called the Communications Museum now, isn't it?
Yeah, the it used to be the Seattle Telephone Museum. Now I think it's called the Museum of Communications.
Yes, sorry. So it was the Seattle Communications Museum. That's what I was trying to say. I guess I'm sort of hardwired to say computer.
You phone freak, you.
Yes. So either way, our specific show topic tonight, we're talking about BSDs. And no, that's not some type of strange STD you can pick up. And speaking of Southern Asia, but
oh, God,
well, I got Bangkok down there, you know.
Insert donkey show discussion here.
So I know nothing about BSD, which is why Koresh and Stalin are on tonight, because they're apparently BSD geeks.
Not BSD geeks per se, but I dig BSD, to start off, inclusively open BSD, because that's kind of like what I use for server platforms and such.
Okay, well, let's start with the general question here. What is BSD?
BSD, developed at Berkeley. Berkeley.
Systems distribution, as far as I remember correctly.
Yeah.
I thought it was systems development or something.
Developed the, BSD and, all kinds of work's been done on it. And, basically at this point, it's just, it has become one of those OSs that, people, I should say probably like Slashdot just kind of battles over. Linux is better and BSD is better and such.
Wasn't BSD dying? I read that on Slashdot. BSD's dying?
What?
Isn't BSD dying? I think I read that on Slashdot.
People in Slashdot say a lot of things.
wasn't BSD based on AT&T System 5 Unix?
From my recollection, yes, but I might be wrong.
No, it was. He's right.
Yeah. But at this point, it's just a different kernel. A lot of people say Linux is a derivative of Unix. It's very Unix-based. But, the concept is, Linux is a different kernel, and, the fucking OSs are just basically a compilation of different tools based on the Linux kernel, so it's not really Unix-based. It's, its own kind of thing, but...
Unix-like, that is.
Yeah, I take it, as a derivative work of Unix, but, a lot of people disagree with me.
Okay, so the three BSDs that I know are OpenBSD and NetBSD and FreeBSD. I know like OpenBSD is some type of uber secure distribution, but what's the difference between the three?
OpenBSD, known for security. I think they didn't have a remote vulnerability in their default install for like 8 years or something like that. So basically, they audit everything that's on their system. It's just massive, massive code reviews, and that's what they're kind of known for. And it's a very solid distribution. FreeBSD is more for the, still very acceptable as a server platform, but it's it's more usable, I would say, than OpenBSD. It's just in some cases friendlier, but it's still kind of a pain to set up and use. Well, to me anyway, because one of my the platform I use the most, I would say, is be Linux. But when I have to use BSD, I'll have a BSD box to work on. But just trying to get one of those things working properly is a pain in the ass. And then there's NetBSD. NetBSD is just kind of known for running on everything. Their thing is, what's their slogan? It probably runs NetBSD or something.
It runs NetBSD.
That's what it is.
Yeah.
And like I think I forget where I saw it. Like they some dude made a toaster that ran NetBSD, and I was like, well, you know, they finally did it. You know, everybody's been saying, you know, NetBSD probably runs on a toaster, and you know, they finally pulled it off, and I was like, you know, good for them.
So, a toaster that toasts bread runs NetBSD.
Yeah, you know, you can you know be running your website while you.
Oh, not to get too far off topic here. In the latest issue of Wired, they have a toaster that also poaches an egg and cooks a piece of Canadian bacon, all at the same time.
But does it run NetBSD?
Of course it can. If it can do that, it can do anything.
Of course it can run NetBSD.
Yeah, apparently it's a very minimalist OS. Like, I was talking to one of Koresh's friends, and he's pretty big into NetBSD and basically says, you know, it's very, very small, but, you know, they have I forget what they call their ports to their port server, and you know, apparently there's a lot of stuff on it. Very, you know, very nice. And they also it's cross-platform compatible, so you can basically run it on you know Linux as well, which is kind of cool. I haven't tried it yet, but I am going to do it at some point because I really like ports. It's a nice system. Like from the looks of it, it's just a
what is ports exactly?
Ports is basically the package tool under, well, not the package tool, it's the package, the way to get packages for FreeBSD. And basically, you have a directory on your system called ports, and there's just a bunch of folders on there for the different tools you need. So let's say you need Apache, you go into ports, go into the Apache folder, and you build it, just make install. And basically what it does, it goes and fetches the latest, well, probably not the latest, but the version that ports has from, you know, the distribution site, like Apache. It'll go download Apache, but it also has a patch for it, so it can build properly under BSD, because there are differences between Linux and BSD that needs to, that you need to basically change in certain things for them to build properly. I think, like, the sockets are a bit different, and shit like that, that you need to change in the source for it to properly build. And, you know, it's very clean, you know, it's all from source, and it's very nice. Usually, some of the ports get maintained by the BSD developers, and it's cool. Like, from what I've heard, some of the ports don't even work, though. It's kind of buggy from reports of some people. I haven't really had a problem with it. Just recently, I couldn't get DSNF to build, but I haven't had DSNF build successfully under any platform for a while since LibNet changed their API. But, you know, it's very cool, to say the least, and it just makes building packages under your system very easy. And, you know, it's source-based, so, you know, the geeks that love to, you know, throw the O3 flag in there and the dash OMG and the, you know, dash pwnage flags, you know, can have their little go at it.
Dude, if I ever make a software package, it's still going to have a dash OMG option on it. I don't know what it's going to do, but it'll be like over something actually that does something.
It'll put it into ScriptKitty mode.
Exactly. There we go.
It will, you know, it'll have like, you know, BO2K running on it. You know, we'll have some Unix port of BO2K, and you know, we'll just build it into the package, just to make life easier for everybody.
So I'm going to piss off a lot of people off here by saying this. So basically, what it is Gentoo. All it is basically a giant takeoff on the BSD port system.
Kind of.
Send your hate mail to radio@binrev.com now.
Yeah, I mean, like, not really. I mean, like, ports. You know, it's just. There's a set of packages, I mean, like Gentoo, you know, their own little collective, but, I mean, I guess
the
concept
is
the same.
Is. Yes.
Yeah, the concept is very similar, but, you know.
Yeah, but do you blame them?
Oh, I mean.
I don't blame them in the least.
Oh, no, I'm not saying it's necessarily a bad thing.
Oh, actually, it'd be It'd be more similar to their Emerge system, where you're like, Emerge such and such package, and, you know, it downloads it and builds it. And basically that's kind of the same concept, but without an actual tool and, you know, to directories and shit like that, so.
Okay, so, well, that, I mean, that's what I was shooting for with the whole Emerge system, is what, where I was drawing the similarity. So basically what Ports is just sort of like a source repository where there's no real automated tools. It's just you download the package, you unzip it, and install it from source, and it should, it hopefully will all work as much as any software package could.
Yeah. You just, you know, cross your fingers.
So we're saying right now that BSD, NetBSD is sort of runs on anything, but like FreeBSD and OpenBSD are more server-based?
Yeah.
Rather than desktop?
Yeah. They're basically known for server stuff. Not the friendliest desktop, I would say. I mean, I've been trying to get the... I scored a new laptop, and I installed FreeBSD because I was like, hey, why not? And it's just a pain in the ass to get it to work, and it's not friendly at all. Like, my philosophy when it comes to this stuff, you know, Linux is for desktop, you know, BSD is for server, and that shit's just kind of worked out for me very, very well. I've never had a problem with it, you know. Linux desktop, very nice. You know, there's plenty of people working on it, and, you know, they keep me happy. But when it comes to BSD, they're more anal when it comes to their development process. So, you know, the base, you know, like, BSD system is just very, very closed, and so it's very stable. It's, you know, not everybody just comes in and's like, oh, dude, I totally wrote, you know, I'm taking this course, and, you know, I just learned this cool new trick, and I'm just going to write this cool kernel module, and it's going to throw it in Linux. No, they're much more, you know, the source is much more closed, I would say. I mean, still open source, but they're much more anal about their development process. And, you know, it's very stable for server, but just getting the shit, like, hardware compatibility, you know, most people run, you know, the big thing with Linux is, you know, it's kind of like the hacker OS, you know, everybody kind of likes to develop under it, and so you have a lot of hardware support, like, you know, some dude goes and gets some video card network card, and it doesn't, you know, doesn't work, so, you know, I'm going to write some module, and it's going to work, you know, fine, and, you know, he writes it, and goes and throws it somewhere, and people are like, oh, that's cool, you just added another module to the kernel source, to the latest tree build, and, you know, it makes life easier, yes, but does it make a more stable kernel? I don't think so, but that's my view on it. Like, I've had a lot of success with the BSD servers. I mean, Ports, like, makes life easier, of course, but, you know, I would never want to run that OS as a desktop system.
Okay, so basically what it is while the kernel is open for most of the BSDs, what it is they're kind of the kernel development is very slow and deliberate as opposed to willy-nilly and all the kind of stuff that Linux has. Like, there's no real, like, development branch for FreeBSD, that is.
Yeah.
In order to upgrade the kernel, in order to make a patch in the kernel, you have to have a damn good reason to do so.
Yeah, you got to know the dude. You know, buy him a couple of beers, and you know, if you're lucky, he might let you get in on the kernel. But, you know, there's a good chance that he still tell you to go fuck yourself. But
international currency.
Yeah. So that's my take on it.
Okay, so say for example, I'm sitting there, I'm ready to jump from Windows. I've never used Unix before. I'm ready to jump from Windows. What should I learn? I choose Linux first, or should I choose BSD first? Like, what's easier, and what would, like, more suit me?
Linux by, you know, huge margins. BSD, you kind of need to know your shit or it's going to eat you alive. I mean, there's times where I go to my corner and cry because they just whip my ass so hard that I can't even handle it. And, you know, if you're new to the Unix environment, Linux has these very nice, like, oh, Red Hat Linux. I mean, well, Fedora at this point, and Mandrake, you know, everything.
Dating yourself.
And, and, you know, it's very friendly, and, you know, it'll help you out through most of the way. You know, you don't need to use the shell that often, and when you do, you know, you can pull up Google, and, you know, it's, and, you know, a lot more people use it, I would think, than BSD, because, you know, it's much friendlier. And, you know, you'll have a much more interesting time, you know, learning Linux than you'll have fighting with BSD to do what you want. And, you know, fighting is what you do with Linux, I mean, with BSD. Linux, you kind of play around with. Fighting, BSD, you'll learn a lot more under Linux, because it's just easier to use. And, you know, once you have that kind of learned, you can, you know, start picking up on the subtle changes there is from BSD to Linux, and, you know, once you pick those up, you know, you'll have no problem. Like,
so only experienced Linux users should use BSD.
Yeah, that's what I say.
Yeah, jumping into BSD before jumping to Linux is definitely a big mistake for 99.9% of the people out there. I mean, especially into the world where the distros are a hell of a lot friendlier than they were when I was trying to get into it.
Amen.
I mean, these guided installations and stuff like this, like, I'm kind of jealous, to tell you guys the truth. So, yeah, stick with the Linux for now and then work your way up.
Yeah, well, I mean, it very much sounds like that's the impression I was getting, too, that basically BSD is sort of like Linux was, I'd say, about 5 years ago. No nice graphical GUI installers. It was very straightforward. You basically downloaded Slackware on 20 floppy disks, and you installed it, and you prayed to God it worked.
Yeah, like, I think there are some teams that are trying to, like, bring BSD to the desktop. I think the project's called, like, Dragonfly.
Yeah. Like,
you know, don't quote me on this, but there's, or PC BSD or something like that, and they're trying to make the entire process friendlier and shit like that. And, you know, I think it's a very nice goal, you know, trying to make BSD much nicer. You know, at this point, if you're new to it, I'd still stick with Linux. Just because of the hardware support, too. I mean, you know, BSD support, you know, for hardware, you know, is decent in some cases, but, you know, if you don't have, like, an NVIDIA card or a 3COM card, your life becomes more difficult. And, you know, if you're starting to get into it, you don't need to battle for hours to try to, find this one dude that lives in Russia out in the middle of Siberia, happens to write a module for BSD for your specific network card, and you have to download it, patch it to your kernel, and it just gets sloppy. And, you know, you probably have a much easier time just to go with Linux because of the hardware support.
One more thing that I'm jealous about today is the fact that someone who wants to get started these days could seriously go and buy a second box for like $50 and just have a second machine to experiment with. Because when I was getting into this stuff, we only had one machine in my house because computers back then were well over $2,000, I'll say. And there was no chance in hell of you having a second machine. So today you can have your main machine and have the box you're experimenting on and just switch back and forth, and you can stay online and, you know, keep looking up anything, you know, any problems you run into. You can just research while you're playing with the second machine.
Oh, yeah.
So,
and also, if you're just starting to get into Linux, that's probably one of the better recommendations is just have, like, go get some dude's P166, you know, throw two network cards in it, throw Slackware, go look up how to use, you know, IP tables. There's a script out there called RC Firewall for Slackware. Or, no, it's not a Slackware thing. It's just a general Linux thing for IP tables. And you can build this router at your, you know, at your cable connection. Like, this is how I got into Linux a couple of years ago, was I built a router and threw it on there and basically just, I want to have a web page. And so you start, you know, learning the different, you know, nonsenses of Linux, and, you know, it's very cool because you're like, oh, I want to manipulate this, and so you spend hours figuring out what you have to do to get it to go, and that's the way I did it. I don't know if it will work for everybody, but the true hacker in nature will kind of enjoy it much more than just kind of getting kicks out of a desktop, but that's just me.
So, but you could really just do that for BSD, too, so.
Oh, yeah,
it's just
like,
really for Linux. But yeah. You really did it more of a baptism by fire, because if you're, if you do something bad to it, your cable connection is down. So make sure it works first.
Exactly. I mean, like, you know, if all comes to worst, you know, you can always just plug in video and start tinkering it with there, but you do have to have some knowledge of it at some point. So, you know, keep Firefox open with a million tabbed windows, all point to, like, how-to sites. So, you know, that's, you know, the way it worked for me. Might not work for everybody, though. Oh, also, live CDs. You know, want to play with Linux? Give those a shot.
I always forget about those because those are really new to me. And one more reason I'm jealous of people today.
Live CDs are fun. Do you know if there's a BSD live CD?
Yeah, I think Dragonfly also released a live CD to give it a shot with.
FreeBSD has one as well, I'm almost positive.
Yeah, they probably do.
I will have to try that out. So, okay. Well, you basically said that Linux is kind of more fluid and easier to get set up. So what are the advantages of BSD over Linux? Why would I want to choose BSD rather than Linux?
Server.
As a server.
Yeah. The security on the BSD platform, in my opinion, is much more solid, you know, especially when you take in consideration, like, OpenBSD. It's very stable. Like, also, like, you know, how I was talking about, like, you know, the development process for the kernel is kind of anal at times.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that plays into it as well. Like, you know, there's not some random hack that just kind of writes some code and throws it into the BSD kernel. It's a very, I would almost say, professional. Like, you know, if BSD started asking for money, people would pay for it. It's very nice. And, you know, if you don't even get it for the security reasons, like, they also have, like, cool tools, like PF. PF is a very cool, well, a very nice firewall, and you can do a lot with it. It's very powerful. And the language they use to write the config files is very fluid and almost English-like, and just makes your life a lot easier. And it's, you know, they also have things like OpenBGPD, which is a routing protocol. So if you needed to build a router just to do, like, very high-end routing, so, like, let's say you wanted to interface with a Cisco router, you could use BGP to communicate with it. I think it also might do OSPF. Not sure on that, though. But, you know, stuff like that just makes it a very stable server platform, and you know, things that are just kind of nice with let's say OpenBSD, you know, comes with built-in stack protection called WX, I believe. You know, Red Hat, I think at this point has EXE Shield. Yeah, they do. I think I don't think it's been ported to Fedora, but they also do like embedded you know, crypto and. And just all this other stuff that just Linux distributions haven't really done, because, you know, it does take some of the usability away, but, you know, it's very nice if you need to keep yourself from getting owned. I mean, you're prolonging the inevitable, yes, but, you know, are you going to make life much harder for people? Of course. I mean,
how many Lux are you going to use? 1 or 15?
What was that?
How many Lux do you want to use? 1 or 15 to your, on your door?
15.
Yeah, exactly.
I remember seeing a Netcraft survey a while ago of like attacks under different platforms. And basically, you see, like, the two, like, it was, like, over a period of time, and basically you had Linux and Windows basically up top and, you know, going up and down. But then at the way bottom, there was just, like, this whole line that, you know, went up and down every once in a while, but kind of stayed stable, and it was BSD, and it's just kind of one of those people have kind of learned to fear BSD, so... you know, that your chances of getting owned by some random dude on the internet, some worm or bot, are much less reduced. And the open, well, I say this for OpenBSD, I'm not sure about free and net, but a lot of their services are chrooted. Chroot is a way to basically separate the application you're running from the rest of the system. It creates its own file system under your own. So if somebody was to, say, found an O'Day and Apache and compromised your server, they would only have access to the directory Apache was built under the Chroot jail. So they have access to that, but they don't have access to the rest of your system. The rest of the system is completely cut off from that little jail. From what I hear, there are ways to break out of a jail, but it's hard. And, you know, so if you get, you know, hit by a worm, not much chance that it'll do real damage to your system.
So if basically what a chroot jail was, if a script kiddie takes down your Apache web server, they're not going to be able to, say, get into your home directory or get hopefully, unless they really know what they're doing, get further onto your system.
Yeah, you know, they're not going to be able to touch your passwords. They're not going to touch anything, really, just that one directory they got themselves into. And, you know, if you don't have anything on there, like a compiler, you know, a shell or anything like that, they're going to have nothing to work with. So they just get to sit there and twiddle their thumbs. Things like that just make, you know, you'll have troubles with the Chroot jail, because you'll want to do something, and then you realize, oh, wait, no, that's under a Chroot jail, and I can't really have anything outside the jail to, you know, to be able to access it outside the jail. So you have to really think about how you want your setup to be, and that's just kind of one of the things, you know, you usually don't have to think about under Linux, you know, because a lot of people just don't build. So
yeah, it is possible to root most of your Chroot services on Linux. I've done it in the flag tournament. I mean, it's not completely impossible, but I would assume that with OpenBSD, since it's all set up initially, you don't have to worry about a lot of the things that you would have to worry about under Linux.
Exactly. I mean, yeah, you can do it under Linux, of course, but OpenBSD kind of does it for you. It's already set up, and you just kind of have to think about how everything's going to be set up to really get it to work efficiently and properly.
Hmm. So, okay, well, that's pretty cool. Are there, like, you were talking about the port system before. Are there lots of software under the port thing, or is it just, like, you know, 10 programs maintained by...
Oh, no. There's a lot of stuff there. I think, like, the last time I looked, there was, like, 5,600 packages under ports. I might be wrong, though. Don't quote me on this, because, you know, there's going to be some dude that's going to be like, that Stalin dude was talking out of his ass. And so, yeah, there is a lot. Like, it's cool because it's all separated into different categories. Like, if you need audio tools, that's there. If you need security tools, also there. That's why I wanted to use OpenBSD, because I know, like, oh, if I need some tools for, you know, whatever reason, I can just go under ports and they probably have it. You know, they have all the cool stuff, like, you know, Nessus and you know, all just a shitload of stuff there. And, you know, if you need something, there's a good chance there it's under ports. Yeah, like audio tools, GUI tools, you know, you name it. It's probably there.
Well, okay. Well, I mean, this sounds pretty cool. Do you have any good websites?
I mean, not the near standard, you know, openbsd.org. Their documentation is usually pretty solid. FreeBSD as well. Let me see. There was also like a BSD forum page, but I can't remember it right now. I mean, as usual, you could always try out the IRC channels, but, you know, I mean, standard, you know, usually the sites that run the distributions are pretty well-maintained. The documentation is usually pretty good. So, you know, if you had this problem, probably 100,000 people have already had this problem, and, you know, the guys have probably written something about it.
And it still hasn't been fixed? That's not a good sign. If 100,000 people have had it, it hasn't been fixed yet.
Well,
I just missed the whole of BSD. Blackratchet at blackratchet.org.
Can I also recommend Google Groups to people? Because that's what I used years and years ago before Google even had anything to do with it, before Google even existed, was the news groups. That's your best bet, and I think it still is. But check out the websites, too. There's still a lot of documentation on different forums and whatnot.
What was Google Groups before it was Google Groups? It was like, wasn't it Deja News or something?
Yes.
Yes, okay, that was
it. Yeah, Deja had it for a long time.
Deja News. Wow, I'm really dating myself there. Oh, okay. Well, hopefully we convinced more than a couple people to run BSD tonight.
Yeah, you know, it's definitely a fun platform to basically learn. You'll get annoyed at some of the differences between some of the commands from if you've used Linux before.
Who fell
like,
off?
Like what?
Someone
somebody
just
fell off.
Off. Yeah,
but it was Scott. 127.21.
Yeah. So you know,
just start from the top.
Wait, what was I talking about?
How BSD is cool.
Who is this?
How BSD is cool. How is BSD cool?
Oh,
here's how it started. Hopefully we convince some people to run BSD tonight.
Yeah, it's, you know, definitely worthwhile checking. What?
Wow, Jesus. It's Scott, or Koresh,
really?
Whatever you want to call him.
Huh. Well, yeah.
Wait, hold on. Let's wait till he
joins back.
Yeah. All right.
Are you on a mobile phone or something?
Yes, he is.
I am on my cell phone. It's been cutting out all night for some reason. It never does this.
Yeah, you need to get... Yeah, exactly. You need to get VoIP running. Exactly.
Yeah.
Okay. So, 3, 2, 1. Well, hopefully we convince some people to run BSD tonight.
Yeah. You know, it's definitely cool, worthwhile to check out. You'll get to learn some of the annoyances from the different operating systems, like BSD to Linux. If you've used Linux before, and you use BSD, you'll get to notice, you know, some of the annoyances, like routes definitely different, you know, and there's just a ton of different things that are exactly the same, but there's just like this one little tweak they did, and it will drive you up the wall just being like, why doesn't that work? But, you know,
it's just more of like the syntax has changed for everything. It's, I mean, if you went from FreeBSD to Linux, you'd probably run into the same wall.
Oh, yeah, definitely. But, you know, you'll still be able to navigate your way through it, and, you know, you'll learn some new stuff, and, you know, hopefully you'll start using a BSD server instead of, you know, your standard Linux box for server. That's just my take on it.
No, I may start using BSD. You never know. I'll have to take one of my spare boxes I have sitting around in my room and fire it up and see what happens. Okay, so, all right, announcements. Let's see. Strom, do you have any announcements?
Well, let's see. I guess I'll re-announce the possible BinRev 760 meeting. Kahless, that's KAHLESS, plus meeting at gmail.com. If you're in the Inland Empire or the High Desert and you're interested in a BinRev meeting, mail him.
Oh, wait a second. Did you just say 760?
Yeah.
Oh. No shit. I come from the fucking 760. 760 is my fucking homeland.
Where specifically do you come from?
Palm Desert.
This is Victorville, Apple Valley, Hesperia.
Victorville,
area.
Hesperia area. And just to re-NSA, I'm not sure if you're enunciating it correct. You're saying it, but just to make sure people understand, that's KAHLESS, the plus symbol, MEETING at gmail.com. Because it's apparently, I think that's a way of sorting stuff on Gmail.
Is it?
I know it's a way of sorting stuff on certain mail systems. I assume that Gmail might support it. I don't know. Or maybe there's just some way of having, you know, KLS plus meeting. Or maybe there's a separate account. He's just cool like that. He could just do br760@gmail.com. I don't know. Either way. Koresh, do you have any announcements?
Announcements? MIT Flea on Sunday. Everybody get down there if you're from Boston area. Last one of the year. It's going to be some good times.
We will be there, and we will be in Hawaiian shirts.
Oh, God damn you, Ratchet. Oh, why do I live in Massachusetts? Why?
Oh, screw you. I'm going to be in a Hawaiian shirt. Screw you all if you don't want to be there.
October 21st, there's a BinRev meeting, Framingham, Massachusetts. Details are on the site and the forums under the meetings category. And I'm going to have a little more information next week regarding the local for the 617-978-781ers, but the Bukkake meeting. That's all for me.
Yes. We started a new group in Boston. It's the Boston Users of Cool Computers and Crazy Electronics, otherwise known as Bukkake.
Oh God!
Yep, there's my announcements. Do we have the website up yet?
No, it's not.
Oh, it's not up yet. Okay, we'll stay at the website. I'll make the announcement as soon as we have the website up.
All right.
Also, when's the next Blue meeting?
Who cares?
Boston Linux user group is having a meeting eventually.
Hold on. If anybody from Massachusetts actually cares. There's a website called BugC. It's BUGC.org, I believe, and it lists all of the Boston area user groups and their meetings.
Boston Linux and User Group, October 19th, will be having the meeting at 7 p.m., MIT Building E51, Room 315. It's going to be Ubuntu Linux with Benjamin Mako Hill.
Oh, fuck that.
In the 315 area.
Will they be serving punch and pie?
I'm not sure if punch and pie will be served.
Ah, all right.
Where our announcement section just sort of delved into chaos. I think actually Koresh carried all my announcements.
One more. If you go to 2600, from a different area code, come down to pound 2600 United on EFNet. You can go to the website, right? It's www.boston2600.org/united. Might be down at the moment, but it should be up rather shortly. You can email me, 2600united@gmail.com. Say what's up, tell us what meeting you're from, what you're working on, and all that other stuff. Love to hear from you. Hope we do.
Yes, if you're active in 2600, email 2600united@gmail.com. And just say who you are, where you're from, and when you're meeting at, because we're just trying to do a nice comprehensive list. So, I guess that's it. Do we have any other announcements?
CatSec.
Yes, okay. We'll edit that out. shouts. I don't know. I'm going to send just regular shouts out to everyone. You know who you are. Shouts to the Hack and Slash, who sucks. Hack and Slash sucks. We're going to have a Hack and Slash sucks episode coming up soon, just for him. I don't know why I said that, but it was something that we were discussing on the channel. I don't know why.
I have to live up to it.
Yeah, we're going to have a Hack and Slash sucks episode. We're going to have Hack on the... We should have Hack on the radio show and just say Hack and Slash sucks the entire time. That'll be episode 125. There we go. Strom, do you have any shouts?
shouts to everyone whom I've promised shouts in the past.
Stalin?
Shouts out to mostly all the dudes in the 617 area, you know, Boston 2600 and such. Yeah, and that's,
how about
Okay.
All right. Koresh?
Yeah, I'm going for the same. Shouts to the whole Boston family, Slice Nick especially. And also shout out to my lady friend who was cool enough to not give me shit about staying home and being on a goddamn radio show tonight.
Indeed, indeed.
A fine example of code switching if I've ever heard one.
Okay. Site of the week. We got this off the white supremacist radio show site. It's privatewebhosting.org. And it's a private web hosting organization for straight white non-Jews.
Oh, yeah, I'm
so
all proclaimed.
I think Strom's eliminated from that big time.
Oh, yes, yes.
Do you need to send in, like, a blood sample if you wanna register?
I don't know. It's a good question.
Do you have to take a picture of, like, your side of the face to see, how big the nose is and such?
I think they probably have one of those.
The test?
You have to also send in a video of yourself screwing a woman so it's doubly sure you're not gay.
Yes, exactly. Oh, Jesus. Yes, yes. Just visit this website. It's a hilarious look. Email, as always, radio@binrev.com. And what's our voicemail number?
Our voicemail number is area code 213-415-1047. Let me repeat that again. Get your pencils out. It's area code 213-415-1047. I wonder if people would send us more voicemail if we had a toll-free number for it.
Perhaps we might be able to set that up.
Yeah.
Closing music tonight is from that same website I sent out last week. It's the Mega Man 3 Blue Lightning OC Remix, which I think is my second favorite song on there compared to last week's. So, as always, farewell and see you next week. Same hack time.
Same hack channel.